All right, everybody, hang on to your Tech Doctor hats because this is going to be a good one. We are back here to talk all about the September 9th Apple event that took place on the very day of this recording. What do you think of it all, Allison, and how are you doing?
Well, I am well. As you all know, Apple events for me are akin to the usual holidays of the year. So I am doing very well. My head is spinning. I think that in terms of the way that Apple has moved their current technology lineup forward today, this is the most exciting Apple event I've seen since I started watching them in 2011.
Yeah, it is really exciting, and we have a ton to cover. So as Tim Cook said, we'll do away with any updates and just get on with it. How about that?
Sounds good.
Well, they started off, Tim did, by talking about Apple Watch and, of course, saying that it's been a big success since it was launched, I guess, back in June, if I remember correctly. And they were saying that how people are loving Siri on the watch and loving the fitness tracking stuff. And, in fact, he was saying that there's a 97% customer satisfaction rating on the watch. And I love my watch, but I was a little surprised, honestly, that for especially this version, it was that high. Any thoughts about that?
I guess when you really think about it, the types of people who would purchase a brand new product like the Apple Watch might, in general, not always, but in general, tend to be somebody who is a little bit more techie, maybe likes to live on the bleeding edge and experiment a little bit. And as we've talked about previously, this is a fantastic 1.0 product. And so that might have something to do with why the customer sat ratings are so high.
It might. And also one thing that kind of, not to exactly contradict what you're saying, but a different side of what you're saying is, it sounds like also now that the watch is in Best Buy and other places, it seems like people who are the non-techie people are really getting into the watch, and maybe in some ways they don't care as much about whether it runs all of its apps all that well. Maybe, you know, maybe it's not such a big deal for those who aren't trying to measure everything in milliseconds to see how quickly the apps load and all that. So I don't know. It sounds like it's going well, though, and that's the good news, I guess.
Fantastic news.
So Tim introduced Jeff Williams to talk a bit more about the up-and-coming features of Watch 2.0, and he talked about that they've added something called time transit, as well as a lot of third-party complications to the watch. And I guess for some apps with certain complications, you're going to be able to kind of jump backwards and forwards in time by turning the digital crown and kind of seeing what's ahead in your day, or maybe what the temperature is going to be like later on in the day if you're looking at the weather, things like that. So, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be nice to be able to use some of these new features. I didn't hear exactly anybody say exactly when Apple Watch 2.0 is coming out. I would have thought it would have been at the same time as iOS 9, but I didn't hear that officially stated today. I don't know whether you did or not.
I didn't. I believe I read on Twitter. It's all been kind of a blur because I've been pretty much broadcasting and podcasting all day. But I think I read on Twitter that it's also going to be out on September 16th with iOS 9. I am so looking forward to this transit feature, specifically in the watch face, because I take buses, I take BART, and it'll just be really great to be able to check the schedule right on my wrist, be able to know, oh no, I missed a bus. I can flip forward in time and figure out exactly when the next one is going to be, all without having to take my phone out of my pocket. It's going to be fantastic.
And with over 10,000 apps on the Apple Watch App Store, you should have a lot to choose from with 2.0.
I should say so.
I think the apps are going to become a lot more important as the watch becomes a bit more independent from the phone, which is going to happen with the next release. Speaking of that, developers can access the speaker, the microphone, the health sensors, and a lot more stuff. There's apparently going to be a nice new app with Facebook Messenger, which I don't use, but I know a lot of people do. The iTranslate app is going to be very cool. You can just speak into your watch and have it translate whatever you said into a different language. I think that would be really great if you're going to travel to a different country, or if you just want to play with Spanish or French or something like that. It's going to be a really cool way to do that, I think.
And working with clients for whom English is not their first language, this will hopefully eliminate the need in some instances for me to hire an interpreter.
Yeah, Next, a man named Dr. Cameron Powell was introduced, and he did a demo of something called Airstrip, which is an app for physicians, and it enables doctors to really do a lot of tracking of healthcare information. And he also talked about a new app that they have coming out soon, which is all for moms who are pregnant, and it allows moms to monitor not only their own heartbeat but the baby's heartbeat, even to hear the baby's heartbeat if she wants to, and she can keep track of her contractions if she's nearing the time of delivery, and even send all this information to her doctor and have her doctor take a look at it and report back on how she's doing without her ever leaving home. So I think it's kind of exciting, huh?
That's really fantastic. I think this is just one of the many ways in which this technology is going to begin to revolutionize the medical field.
Yeah, and we're going to see a whole lot more of that. It's just we're at the very beginning of that now, so I can't wait. I was a little surprised, and I wonder if you were, that there are some new watch models being introduced. There's a company called Hermes, maybe you know more about them than I do, who has partnered with Apple. As best I could tell from the presentation, apparently there's going to be some watches made by Hermes with their watch face, but with Apple Watch functionality. Is that what you got out of it?
Yeah, I have a feeling that the watch is going to look, you know, different just in terms of the band and the watch, it seems like, from the traditional Apple Watch. Hermes is pretty high fashion, so that's way, way beyond anything I could ever afford, and I'm perfectly happy with my stainless steel Apple Watch that I got recently. I am interested, though, in some of the new bands that were announced. I understand there's one that's red-colored that you can get. They said you could get it with a stainless steel watch and that proceeds would help to fight AIDS, but I'm wondering also if you can get the red band separately, because I would do that. I've been wanting to check out the sport bands anyway, so I may as well do it for a good cause and get the red one.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if you can't. I don't know if we know that detail for sure right now, but I just bet you'll be able to go into an Apple store and get one. They announced two new sports models, I guess just colors really, one in gold and one in rose gold. So I think they're gearing up for the holidays, don't you?
I think so.
These two new models are both in the sport line. They're the anodized aluminum, but they're the same price and same size as the ones we already know about. So I think they're just adding a little bit to give people a few more choices. There's a stainless steel space black model now also with a sports band. I couldn't tell for sure if that's a new watch or just maybe a new black band. I'm not sure about that one.
I think it's just a new band, but again, it wasn't.
New classic leather band. I think it's a two-tone band. And so, you know, just some nice additions to the watch line. It's amazing to me how that line is growing with both the hardware and the software so doggone fast, given that this whole thing just really got going back in June. It's crazy.
It's really unheard of, and it's wonderful. I can't wait to see what they can do next with it. I think, you know, we will probably come to expect perhaps more frequent software updates on the Apple Watch, simply because what it can do seems to be able to change so quickly, and the impact that it's having on our world and especially health is changing so quickly.
I do want to correct something that I misspoke about earlier. I do see here in my notes that Apple Watch 2.0 is going to be available on September 16th. I think that's what you said.
Yeah, and it's right here in mine as well.
So that's kind of the highlights, really, of what was said about Apple Watch. Pretty good stuff, and I think we can all be excited to see how the sales go over the holidays. That's what I'm really looking forward to finding out.
Yeah, I think those numbers are going to look real good.
I suspect so. So next, there was a lot of debate in the podcasting/tech community about whether or not Apple would do anything new with the iPad during this presentation. And sure enough, Tim Cook announced that there is going to be a new iPad Pro. And the iPad Pro is pretty much, I think, what we were expecting it to be. It's in part, at least, geared toward enterprise, I think, because they mentioned some apps and did some demos from people like IBM and places that are more entrenched in the corporate sphere. But it also seems like a really neat iPad for just about for anybody. It's a 12.9-inch display, which means you can have a full-size soft keyboard. And it just seems like it's not going to be that much bigger or heavier. Obviously, it's bigger because of the size of the display, but it still seems like it's going to be very thin and very light. What did you think of the iPad Pro?
I think it's pretty amazing sounding. I personally am not really going to be in the market for one, but I think it's going to... I was talking a little bit about this on Mushroom FM when I was part of the tech team a couple of hours ago. I think in a lot of ways it's going to disrupt the laptop market for people who even now are sort of on the fence of, do I invest my money in something like a MacBook or a MacBook Air, or do I get a new iPad? Well, now I think for some people, especially with the keyboard accessory that was announced, and I'm sorry, I'm jumping around a bit, but with the keyboard accessory that was announced, I think that in for some people, this will be a laptop replacement.
Well, I'm not a very good test case, but just in my little department at the university, people kind of started, to some degree, moving away from the iPad to other tablets, I think mostly because they were wanting to use Microsoft Office products on the iPad. And that was back before Microsoft made their big play of making those Word and Excel and PowerPoint available for free on the App Store. But I'm imagining that this is going to really bring some of those people back to the iPad Pro because it's going to work really well with these apps. It's honestly a huge display. It's going to be 2732 by 2048 pixels, which actually, if you do the math, comes out to 5.6 million pixels. Which is more pixels than are even on the 15-inch MacBook Pro Retina. So that surprised me a little bit. I mean, wow, this must be quite a display, and I think it's going to be great, especially for people who use the iPad visually.
Yeah, especially I think for low vision folks. For voiceover users, I feel like we're going to have the same issues in terms of using this as a full laptop replacement because it is still not quite to a point where we can do full office-type productivity in terms of getting voiceover feedback about a lot of formatting yet on the iPad. I think that as Office for iPad continues to mature and as Microsoft continues to demonstrate how committed they are to accessibility, we might also be able to begin to get some better feedback in terms of formatting in apps like Pages as well. So I think that if you're really thinking about this as a laptop replacement, you might want to think about how much you're doing in terms of document creation. But I agree. I think especially for low vision people, it'll be just great.
Yeah. In fact, I know someone who was asking the other day, is there going to be a larger iPad? So she's a low vision person who may be very happy to find out that there is.
Yeah.
It's got a brand new chip, an A9X chip. It's 1.8 times faster than the A8 from the iPad Air 2. And over the last 5 years, it's kind of interesting. The CPU performance has grown 22-fold from the original iPad to what we have now. And the graphics performance has gone up 360 times. It's just crazy to think
about.
That's
insane.
Yeah. So I just think this is going to be a really amazing graphics machine for people who are into that.
Oh my God, yeah.
One more set of statistics which are kind of interesting to me and just for fun, kind of fascinating. The iPad Pro is faster than 80% of the PCs that were shipped in the last 12 months. And in its graphics tasks, it is faster than 90% of the PCs that were shipped. So, I mean, I think Apple is really targeting this device for people who want something that is touch sensitive, that you can do the kinds of things that a touch interface can only let you do, but that really gives you the power to do some serious computing on it. And it's kind of fascinating to me that they, we'll talk about it in a second about some of the other, some of the accessories that they've made available for the iPad Pro, but it's just kind of fascinating to me. I think they've stayed true to their original ideas about how the iPad should be, but they've also really expanded it here with a whole lot of horsepower. So it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, they have waited until they could do it without compromising the system, the iOS look and feel, but they are going to absolutely destroy the traditional PC market. I really believe that.
That'll be interesting to see. And my son, who's a filmmaker, would be really interested because they were saying that you can edit three simultaneous streams of 4K video on this iPad Pro.
Wow.
And, you know, that means you can use iMovie to edit movies. And I don't know, the one thing I wondered about that, and I don't know what, maybe iMovie takes care of this, but I know when my son is editing a movie, those video files he's editing can be absolutely huge. And I don't know whether you could get them on, even on a 128 gig iPad. I'm not sure how you deal with that.
Be interesting to see. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, we don't know all the details at this point. And it's still going to get its traditional 10 hours of battery life. This new chip is apparently less power hungry, even though it's driving a lot more pixels. And they've done some things to optimize how the iPad uses its power. But it sounds like, you know, they've really stayed with this really great battery life. And I'm sure people are going to love that.
Yeah.
One thing people who are blind are going to be really interested in, and I know I'm interested in checking this out, is that there's a whole new sound system, four-speaker system built into the iPad Pro, and I think that's going to be interesting to see exactly what it sounds like.
That did kind of kick my iPad Pro lust into high gear. I'm absolutely not going to get one, at least not this iteration, but I must say that if I do get another iPad down the road, it may be an iPad Pro simply because of that fantastic, pretty much sound system within a tablet.
I can't wait to see if it sounds as good as they say it does. I hope it does.
I hope so, too. Because the iPad Air 2 already sounds really good. I know I use that for a lot more radio stuff because it sounds so much better even than my iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah, it does sound good. So that's going to be interesting to see how all that goes with the iPad Pro. It's interesting. I think if I understood correctly, they were saying that the iPad Pro weighs about the same amount as the original iPad.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. It's a little bit heavy compared to the Air, but it's a lot bigger. So, I mean, it would have to be, I guess.
Yeah, and traditionally with something that size, you're going to be either having it on your lap or using it on a desk or table in front of you, I would imagine.
Yeah. And you mentioned this really briefly earlier, but there's a new hardware accessory keyboard available for the iPad Pro. And it seems like it would be quite a nice accessory, covered in fabric. And they say that the keys have a good feel to them. There's a dome switch that lets you turn it on and off, which would be good because one of the big complaints with the Apple keyboard is that it's too easy to have it accidentally come on in your bag, but I don't think this keyboard is going to suffer from that problem. Plus, I'm assuming that it would not power on anyway unless it was actually connected to the iPad, which it's going to do through this new magnetic connector that they have developed, which is a bidirectional connector, meaning that you don't have to have a battery. There is no battery in this keyboard. It gets its power from the iPad Pro, but then it also sends data from its keystrokes to the iPad Pro. So it's moving in both directions, and it seems like this must be quite a neat connector, assuming that, you know, it all fits together as nicely as Apple usually makes their connectors work. I'm betting that'll be pretty cool.
It'll definitely be interesting to see. You'll have to have the iPad in landscape mode when using it, obviously, but which I don't normally do, but it will basically eliminate the need, especially as the keystrokes, especially for VoiceOver, get even more and more robust with different versions of iOS as they come out, it may eventually eliminate the need to even use the screen at all if you're just going to be holding it and have the keyboard in front of you.
Yeah, you can just issue voiceover commands that way. So that'll be interesting to see. I look forward to going to an Apple store and trying one of these out when they're available. And there's a new stylus that Apple has come out with called the Apple Pencil, interestingly enough. And this is really used when a person needs to do some drawing or some handwriting that requires greater precision than what you can actually achieve with just using your finger. And they've really re-engineered the touch sensor to make it much more sensitive. It refreshes a lot more often than it did in the previous iPads, which means that the iPad can detect much finer movements and even can detect to how hard you're pressing onto the screen with the pencil and things like that. So I think that I've heard several artists say they really longed for something like this on the iPad, and so Apple definitely has responded here with this Apple Pencil accessory. I don't guess it will have a lot of use for those of us who are blind, but nevertheless, I think it'll be an interesting tool for some people.
I was actually thinking about how it could be really useful for a blind child, either using an app like Do It Right that already exists now, or developing a learning app for kids where they can independently use VoiceOver to read about the shapes of the letters and then have an area where they practice and they could get audio feedback, even if they did like a little cartoon character or something that was like, good job, you know?
Yeah.
And could learn about handwriting, because that's one of the things that I wish I had been able to devote more time to. I mean, I can sign my name pretty well, but I would like to be able to handwrite the entire alphabet. And my inner child would, I think, would benefit from something like that.
Yeah, you'd have fun.
Yeah.
And there are already some apps built in that are going to support this Apple Pencil, like the Notes app and the Mail app for letting you mark up mail in certain ways. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Next, we had some presentations about how some of the apps that developers are working on are going to work with the iPad Pro. And we had a person from Microsoft, Kirk Koenigbauer, showed some Office apps on iPad Pro. And then we had a person from Adobe demo a whole new suite of apps. His name was Eric Snowden. And these were some interesting Adobe apps that really let him create some content and then edit that visual content using a couple of Photoshop type apps. And then he was even able to take, he wasn't quite satisfied with the smile on the model's face, so he was able to enhance her smile using one of these Adobe apps, and he said make it feel, have it a bit warmer feel to it. So just a lot of interesting things going on that we're going to see continued, I think, between this marriage between the corporate partners like Microsoft and Adobe and Cisco and so on. I mean, this is clearly, at least in part, where they're headed with this iPad Pro, I think.
Right, and it's great that Apple is fostering this new openness, because with their great hardware and software powering these great ideas from these other companies, I mean, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, it really is. And again, you know, there was another demo that kind of takes us back to the healthcare area, but this is really an app that was designed to help train physicians who are studying human anatomy. The company itself was called 3D for Medical, and the presenter was named Irene Walsh, and she did a very nice job of showing how you can really use this visual tool to teach medical students, and also how you can use this tool to build a better relationship between doctors and their patients. She gave an interesting stat. I don't know where she got this from, but she said that the typical medical consultation is about 7 minutes long. I don't doubt that.
Yeah.
And she said that each doctor, on average, recalls about 14% of what the patient said during that consultation.
Oh, gosh.
And so that doesn't make me feel real good about going to the doctor.
No.
But this app can really help, I think, doctors and patients maybe understand a bit more about what's going on with that consultation, and they can maybe communicate in ways other than just, you know, the patient saying something and doc nodding his or her head and not really hearing a whole lot of it. So, I mean, I thought that was exciting.
Yeah, anything that makes healthcare more accessible and individualized is a good thing. And with Apple driving that, it could only be a good experience.
I think so. So the good old new iPad Pro, which we're going to see, I believe they said in November, it has an 8-megapixel EyeSight camera. It also has a FaceTime camera. Has, of course, Touch ID. It's going to come in silver, gold, and space gray. And the starting price for it is going to be $799. That's for a 32 gig. And I believe the 128 gig is $150 more than that. And I assume there are some different configuration options, but I guess those are probably starting prices.
Yeah, there's another configuration if you want to add LTE, and you can add, I don't know if you'll be able to add, probably in the customize order section, you'll be able to add things like the pencil and the keyboard accessory, although you could buy those separately as well.
Right, if you want to entertain your inner child with the Apple Pencil,
yes,
that's gonna cost you only $99. And if you want that smart keyboard, you can pay $169.
Great. I want there to be an app that will allow me to color like I used to when I was little, and then use machine learning to decipher what the hell it is I actually drew.
Yeah, that would be, sounds like a good plan.
Yeah.
So the lineup now for the iPad is going to be the iPad Mini 2 has been lowered in price, starting at $269. And next there was a new iPad Mini 4 announced, which is essentially the same power as the iPad Air 2, but it's in the mini size form factor. And that's going to start at $399. So these prices, you know, are just pretty much in line with what we've seen for the iPad line. They've got several to choose from, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how people decide which one to go for.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think that this is going to just continue to move the iPad forward in prominence.
I agree. I don't think anyone was really surprised, but I know a lot of people were really hoping to hear something about a new Apple TV. And that was the next thing that was announced today. Tim Cook made it really clear that Apple believes that the future of TV is apps. And so they're all about creating an Apple TV that will run apps. And Eddie Q came up and told us kind of what it's all going to be like. There's going to be a new set-top box, a new remote, a completely redone user interface. The remote is going to use voice commands with Siri as well as touch commands. It's going to have a glass surface on the top where you do your gestures and your swiping and so forth. Can't wait to see how that works with VoiceOver.
I think it will definitely work from day one. As these products have come out, they have thus far, especially really what kind of cemented my faith was the Apple Watch working accessibly from day one and having VoiceOver. So I'm sure this new Apple TV, they'll have figured out a way to incorporate accessibility. I imagine it'll be something similar to the iPhone, honestly, how you interact with that.
I imagine so. But they were giving some interesting ideas. Like they said, you can glide across a set of movies, and when you stop, that's the one that you've picked. And I don't know whether you'll flick with VoiceOver or just really how that will work.
I had
the impression though that glide motion was really cool and really fluid if you were using the Apple TV visually. So anyway, that's going to be interesting to experiment with.
Yeah.
And there's a Siri button on the remote. And you actually hold that down when you want to talk to Siri. And you can say things like, show me funny TV shows, and Siri will come up with a list of comedies that are sorted by popularity. There is going to be this universal search capability on the Apple TV with Siri that a lot of people have been talking about. And that's going to be really great because you can ask Siri to find a movie for you, and Siri will just do a search of all the various providers like iTunes and Netflix and Hulu and HBO and so on, and will then come back with a list and tell you where the movie's available, and I'm assuming what it will cost you to rent it or stream it or whatever, and then you can more easily make your choices from here. Because now it kind of drives you crazy if I figure out, well, is it on Netflix or Hulu, or where is it? So I mean, that's going to be a big improvement.
I've been waiting for this for so, so long, and I'm so glad that it's going to finally be here.
Yeah, I think it's in some other devices now. I know TiVo comes to mind as being able to do this kind of search. I think that maybe, in a sense, Apple's playing a little bit of catch-up here, but it's sure nice to see it come.
Well, it's nice to have it finally be accessible. It's somewhat accessible on Xfinity, but you don't have access to nearly as much content, of course.
So next, a woman named Jen Fold demonstrated Apple TV for us. She's from the Apple TV team with Apple, and she talked about some of the new screensavers, which apparently look really great. And one cool thing about them is they're going to display different views depending on whether they're displaying during the day or at night. So I guess that's going to put you in the mood, huh?
Exactly.
Apple Music, of course, has been added to Apple TV along with an app store. Jen did spend quite a bit of time showing just how easy it is to use the remote. She showed a lot of things with Siri. You can ask Siri to show an episode of Modern Family that featured Edward Norton, for example, and Siri is able to go out and parse through Modern Family, find that episode, and you're able to start playing it right away. Showed how you can skip ahead by 7 minutes just by a voice command. And one of the coolest ones I found, which I'm excited about, is that she showed how you can ask Siri, what did she say? If you miss something, Siri will automatically back up by 15 seconds. And not only can you hear what was said again, but Siri will temporarily turn on captioning so you can, if you're able to see it, you can see in writing on the screen what was actually said. So I know my wife's going to love that feature.
That's wonderful. And I could just see that being a really easy way to quickly rewind for us as well.
Yeah, it's nice that you can do all these voice commands. And you can ask Siri to show me things like action movies and classics. Siri's going to apparently be good at filtering searches based on things like a cast member or a director or a date or age rating, things like that. So I just think, you know, this is just the next step really in making Siri more practical, more useful in your living room.
I agree. I've been waiting for him or her to come to the Apple TV for a very long time.
A lot of commands you can use the remote for without having to push buttons or dig into menus. She was just resting her thumb on the remote, and that would cause info about the movie to come up. And she was able to swipe down and get more information and get to settings and things like that. And you can even do things like ask Siri who's starring in this movie, and Siri will display that information. And the answer to these questions are displayed on the bottom of the screen, which is nice for visual users because it doesn't interrupt the flow of the movie. I'm sure Siri will speak that information. Unfortunately, for people who are blind, you don't have any choice but to get interrupted. How else would you get
right.
the information?
Exactly.
You can ask for things like sports scores and ask about the weather. And if you want to know more details about the weather, you can swipe up and Siri will pause the movie long enough for you to look at the weather details. Siri can open Apple Music and play playlists and do all sorts of things. So it's really cool. All the apps have been redesigned. I think so many people were saying, wow, the Apple TV has been long overdue for a refresh, and it's gotten kind of clunky looking and clunky feeling, and you know, the apps need to work better and look better, and looks like they've done all that.
I would say so.
And the developers starting now have access to the new operating system called tvOS, and they can begin working on apps, which hopefully will mean, you know, there'll be quite a bit available even when the hardware is available, and I think it's coming available in October.
Yes, there's also a limited supply of pre-release hardware. You don't know how tempted I am to, because I'm a registered developer, I'm very tempted to get it just to test accessibility, but I'm trying to save it for the real developers.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope that somebody is working with it with VoiceOver. I'm sure somebody is. And there are lots of interest in games for the Apple TV, so I think we're going to see a lot in that space. It'll be interesting to see whether it can compete, whether gamers feel that it can compete with the other gaming platforms. I think Apple's hoping that it will, but I don't know whether this remote, you know, will be sufficient for as a game controller or not. That'll be interesting to find out.
I know some people complain about using the touchscreen as a game controller. I have always found that many times I prefer using the touchscreen. I am interested to see what is offered in terms of accessible games as well.
Someone named Andy Sum did demo a game, which seemed like it would be interesting if you're into games. I think that there's going to be a lot of buzz around apps for the Apple TV, be they games or something else. I think that's just going to be really the thing that's going to differentiate Apple from the other set-top box makers, if they can really get this app store going the way they hope they can.
Right. It figures they're going to start competing with the console market right after I bought a PlayStation 4.
Yeah. Do you get much use out of the PlayStation 4?
I literally just got it, and unfortunately, the setup process still requires a lot of sighted assistance, and we haven't had that yet. But we're moving to an area that's closer to one of Jeremy's friends who's also a gamer, so I'm hoping that I may at some point be able to report back, possibly here, on how that's going.
Yeah, maybe you can even at some point do a bit of a comparison between gaming with the PlayStation and the new Apple TV. That'd be interesting to talk
about.
That'd
be fabulous. I'd love to.
So next, a woman named Michelle Peluso from a company called Gilt demonstrated how you can do shopping on the Apple TV. And I have to admit, my credit card or my Apple Pay finger was twitching a little bit when she was talking about this, because one of the things that's hard for me to do is to really buy clothing that works for me, and I hate spending all that time traipsing through the mall to try to find something. So it might be interesting to see if Apple TV shopping, and again, that might be something where a little sighted input would be helpful, because apparently these clothing items can be displayed in such tremendous vividness and detail on the screen that I think you're really going to be able to tell a whole lot about exactly what you'd be getting. And that's kind of exciting, I think.
It would be fantastic if it was accessible, because that's one of the things that I have the hardest time with Jeremy and I both being blind, and having some friends in the area to help with shopping, but having not that many. Most of my friends are blind as well, so
yeah,
at least in this area. It would be great if the app was accessible, and if there were textual descriptions of the clothing, that would be able to help me really independently shop.
Yeah, let's hope that there will be, or that will be coming along. It sure would be helpful for that, no doubt. Well, then Chad Evans from Major League Baseball did a couple of sports demos. So it looks like, of course, the Apple TV is going to be quite popular for sports enthusiasts, because you can actually, if you are so inclined, even watch two baseball games at the same time. Sounds potentially a little confusing to me.
That would give one baseball game is hard enough for me to follow. I think two would just make my brain explode.
Two might be a bit much, huh?
Yeah.
Apparently, the App Store for Apple TV is going to work in a very similar manner to the iOS App Store. And it's interesting that they did mention that developers are going to be able to create universal apps that will work on iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV. So maybe that will help our wallets and our pocketbooks a little bit if we don't have to buy quite so many apps.
Right.
You are going to be able to start a game on your iPhone and pick it up on your Apple TV. That's pretty cool, I guess.
That's pretty sweet.
So the hardware is going to be 64-bit A8 processor. It's going to have, of course, the latest Wi-Fi and the latest Bluetooth. And the new remote uses Bluetooth. So it's great. You don't have to have it pointed exactly at the TV or even at the TV
Thank
at all.
God.
Yeah, that's going to make it a whole lot easier to use. And I'm not sure how this will work for some of us who use our Apple TVs through sound systems, but they say that it's going to be possible to control the volume of the TV through the remote and to turn the TV or a receiver on and off with the remote. And that when it comes on, it will automatically switch the input to the Apple TV. So if I can get that all work well on my clunky old 14-year-old stereo receiver, no, not going to happen. There's going to be a new receiver in my future, I'm sure. But to get all that working is going to make it so much easier to get the Apple TV on and going. Right now, at least for me, I have to switch an HDMI cable around and do a little few stand on my head a couple times, do a few quirky things to make it work. But I think it's going to be a whole lot simpler with the new one.
Yeah, we have a splitter, and you always have to walk over to the splitter and push the right button, and then sometimes it just doesn't work, and I'm looking forward to that much simpler process of loading things up.
The remote is going to have a rechargeable battery, but they said the battery should last about 3 months, and it's got a lightning connector, so you just plug in a cable and I guess an Apple charger when it needs to be charged. So at least we won't be messing with the environment with our AA batteries or whatever,
right?
Whatever goes in those remotes. So
yeah,
it seems like it'll be really great. Actually,
looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I was a little surprised to see that they came out with two models, and I kind of don't know how I feel about that. One model is going to be going to have 32 gig flash storage, and it's going to cost $149. But then there's going to be a 64 gig storage for $199. I don't know. If you're not a gamer, I don't know whether one will necessarily need the 64 gig storage. But knowing me, I'd probably be reluctant to buy the 32 gig. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, it's only $50 more, and it's not going to break the bank, so I will go for the 64. What I wonder is if this is going to eventually tie into the rumored TV service that I hope that Apple will be providing, hopefully in 2016, if you might be able to use your TV set-top box then as its form of DVR to record television shows. Now, typically, video files are very big, so I don't know how much you would be able to record with it, but I'm sure Apple will figure something out.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how this, whatever they come out with to try to meet the needs, will it be like a traditional TV system in the sense that you're talking about, or will it simply be apps that you will just call up whatever show you want to watch whenever you want to watch it? I just don't know what that will be like.
Yeah, I have a feeling it might end up being a combination of both. There will be a lot of flexibility in terms of on demand, but of course for things like local news that still show at a specific time each day, I would imagine that there would be some actual live streaming capabilities as well.
There would have to be. I mean, you know, you're not going to have a local news app for every news station.
Right, and you wouldn't want to watch your news on demand. You want to watch it when it's happening.
Or not, like me, not watch it at all. But, you know, I think that we are kind of in a crisis around my house because for reasons that I can't find an answer for, our cable bill has gone up tremendously in the last year. And we have just about decided to cut the cord and use what's available now, Netflix, Hulu, HBO, and the different apps, and sort of with knowing there's a likelihood that Apple's going to do something in this market sometime next year. But we're just about fed up with paying $250 a month for cable.
Yeah, I can't wait to tell Comcast where to stick it and hopefully switch to fiber when it becomes available in Santa Rosa and just use the Apple TV service.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We're talking, and it's really more my wife, Vicky, who she's a TV watcher, but she's tired of paying that much. And so she's pretty much committed herself to cutting the cord, probably even as early as this weekend. So we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting.
Well, let me know. We'll have to follow your cord cutting adventures on the podcast.
Yeah, because for her, it would be a very different approach. She now watches, you know, things on demand, or mostly records them on the DVR and then goes back and watches them later. So it'd be a whole new paradigm for her to have to search for things in Netflix or Hulu or whatever. So we'll see how that works out.
We'll have to have her on. Come on, sis.
Yeah. We'll see if we can get her to step up to the microphone and talk about it. So one thing happened today that I'm sure was a complete shock to you, as it was to me. There were two new iPhones announced.
Well, I wasn't expecting that at all, I have to tell you. That was the bombshell.
Yeah. That was the very last product announcement, and I was about to decide no iPhones this year, but sure enough, they came along. And it was interesting, Tim Cook told us that iPhone usage is really growing. And during the last quarter, iPhone grew at 3.5 times the rest of the industry. And that is just interesting to me, because the rest of the industry, as he said, is in decline.
Yep.
Well, in China, iPhone usage grew by 75%. And so that's clearly a big market. And I think some people got scared when the Chinese stock market started having trouble, or the Chinese economy started having trouble. But you know, it seems like China and iPhones are getting along all right so far.
People have a lot of options there, but clearly iPhone is the winner.
Well, I'm sure you were shocked to learn that the new iPhones will be called the 6S and the 6S Plus.
Yeah, I was expecting something totally different.
Yeah. And Phil Schiller came back and did a presentation on the new phones. They are going to be made from a different aluminum. This is a special aluminum developed by Apple. It's called the 7000 series, which should make them stronger. Hopefully we'll see no bend gate this time. I don't think we will.
Aluminium, Robert.
Yes, I must learn to pronounce that. You are correct. And they're going to be in four colors this time: a silver, a gold, a space gray, and a new rose gold. Are you going to go?
That's the one I want. Yes,
you're going to go for that rose gold.
So bad, yeah. And I'm not blaspheming by covering it up with a case this time either.
No, I don't use a case, and I do fine without one. And I like it without a case, but you do have to be careful. That's for sure.
I use mine without a case currently, but I also drop it a lot, so I'm really hoping that
that's good aluminum. Good aluminum.
Yeah.
Hope that aluminum will serve you well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope so. Yeah. I don't know. I might go for the rose gold. I was asking Vicky about it, and she goes, "Oh no, not rose gold." But anyway, I guess that wouldn't be her color. I don't know if she's getting a phone or not. She hasn't said. She's one of the people who loves that smaller form factor of the iPhone 5. She just doesn't want a bigger one.
See, eventually, though, she's not going to have a choice when the iPhone 5 reaches the end of its life cycle.
Yeah, something's going to happen, right?
Yep.
Maybe we can rebuild it for her. Who knows? But but I'm guessing it'll probably mean upgrading to a bigger phone, whether she wants one or not.
Yeah.
So they are pretty much the same. They might be a slightly thicker, but the displays are exactly the same size as last year. Apparently there is a new glass, which also may help your dropping problem. It's supposed to be a bit more durable. So what do you think about this new feature that they spent so much time on it, which is called 3D Touch? And it's kind of an extension to the whole multi-touch idea. It sort of takes it to a new level, I guess.
The iPhone will be able to register the force with which you are touching an area of the screen. And as you touch at different depth levels, you can perform different actions. I am fascinated by how this is going to work with VoiceOver. I am not worried. I think that Apple have considered the implications for accessibility and for VoiceOver users long before this announcement. So I am just really, really excited to see how this will change how we interact with the phone. And of course, all of the standard gestures will still work as well.
Yeah, but it sort of adds some new shortcut capabilities. And they call a lighter touch a peek. So for example, if you're using mail and you're sitting on a message, you want just to peek into the message and see what's there, you can do a lighter touch. But then if you want to actually go into the message itself, you do a bit harder force touch, which they're calling a pop, which pops you into the message. So we're going to have to get used to peaks and pops, I guess.
It sounds adorable.
Yeah.
And second of all, I just can't wait to see, will this eventually change or take the place of the double tap as more hardware conforms to this new standard? I don't know. I would love to be able to just do one tap to do everything and just let the force of the tap guide the action that's performed.
We have it on the watch already, force touch, but it
serves
a different purpose on the watch to some degree.
And
it's interesting that they talked about, I didn't understand it fully, I don't think, but that this 3D touch provides tactile feedback. And they've done this by making the feedback very precise. So as I understand it, a lighter touch is going to give you a 10 millisecond vibration or haptic sensation, and a harder touch is going to give you a 15 millisecond. So I don't know exactly what that's going to feel like when we actually have the chance to work with it, but I'm fascinated by the fact that there is going to be some tactile feedback process going on here, which we don't really get tactile feedback when we do force touch on the watch. That's going to be kind of a new experience.
It's going to be really interesting. I could see this having really great implications for mapping software. I think it's going to be great. And all I want to say is, David Woodbridge, you will get the phone a day before the rest of us, being in Australia and all, and you do such fantastic tutorials. So I fully expect that by the time I get my iPhone on the 25th, there will be a beautifully done David Woodbridge tutorial on how to use all this.
I'm sure he's had a few months to rest up after the watch, so he should be ready to go. Huh?
Rest up and save up, David.
That's right. We're counting on you, David. No pressure.
None at all.
So I think that this whole force touch, to me, is probably, they don't call it force touch, it's 3D touch they're calling it. It is probably the biggest change that I am likely to be affected by that I saw from the new phones today.
Without a doubt.
We did have some specific demos of 3D touch that Greg Federighi did, and they've pretty much kind of showed what we've already talked about, so we won't go into any more details about that, because I think, honestly, we're going to have to get this technology in our hands before we can really say much more authoritative. We need to see what it feels like.
Yeah. It'll be fun to play, too. I mostly kid David Woodbridge, but I'm going to be interested to just kind of poke around and see what happens.
Yeah, you're going to peek around and pop around.
Peek and pop all over the place and see where it leads me.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you're going to be able to do some really cool things. Like in messages, if you get a message with a flight number, you should be able to peek at that and have it show you the time that the flight's going to arrive or what the situation is with the flight. So, I mean, just some things like that are going to be really convenient.
That is sweet. Hopefully, if you get something with a phone number in it, you might be able to peek and just add it to contacts. I can see a lot of times now where we're fiddling with the rotor and trying to get to a link and pressing on that, double tapping that to try to make something happen. I could see these peaks and pops really helping.
Yeah, I think it's going to make a difference in how easily and how quickly we can work with our phones. So we shall see. It sounds like some of the app developers are already really working on this. They've talked about the fact that Dropbox is going to be implementing 3D touch, and so will Facebook and Instagram. So, you know, the popular ones are going to be probably there with it very soon after the hardware comes available. And you can use 3D touch to do things like automatically play videos. That's going to be cool.
Yeah.
The phone is using a new A9 chip, which is 70% faster CPU tasks and 90% faster with graphics tasks. So, boy, they've really sped things up a lot with these new A9 chips this year.
And it's already so snappy. I'm just so excited.
Next, there was a game demo, which we don't need to really spend too much time on. But again, I think because of the capabilities of this new chip, we're probably going to see a lot of new games coming along for this new device. It was interesting to me that the motion coprocessor is now built into this chip, which means it's always on. And that should be a good thing for things like fitness data. And even it's going to enable those of us who want to use it to be able to speak to Siri using that command, which I won't say, which triggers everyone's Siri who's listening to the podcast. But you're going to be able to speak to Siri without pushing a button, and you don't even have to have your phone plugged in anymore for that to work. And we've got a new second generation Touch ID sensor, which is twice as fast as the one that we currently have. So you're not going to have to hold your finger on there nearly as long to get your fingerprint read, I don't think.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty fantastic. It's already very fast.
It is.
There are definitely incidences where it could happen faster, and it seems like it will now.
Yeah, maybe if I can get a few more milliseconds back in my life, that would be really great.
Yeah. Every millisecond counts in this go age in which we live.
Yeah, I would enjoy that extra time.
Yeah.
And it's exciting new camera, a 12 megapixel EyeSight camera. Lots of new filters to keep the image quality really high. So I'm hoping that will do us well for OCR apps.
Yes.
Faster autofocus, which might be helpful. Really a lot more accuracy. There's a new filtering technology, which I really love the name of, called Deep Trench Isolation. Deep Trench Isolation.
Sounds to me intense.
It sounds like something you'd do on a camping trip.
Yeah.
Or a war.
Yeah.
Deep Trench Isolation. And the panoramas apparently are going to be able to be a lot larger. And I know a lot of people enjoy taking the panoramic photos. And people were wondering, would this new camera be capable of doing 4K video? And the answer is yes, it is going to be.
Yay.
And with 4K video, you're going to have a total of only 8 million pixels in every frame. So
wow, that's not nearly enough pixels. I really was hoping for 10 million.
Yeah, but you can't get everything you want. And there's going to be a new 5 megapixel FaceTime camera. So knowing how much you enjoy taking those selfies. That's going to come in really handy for you.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, you can take them in the dark because it's going to use the actual display screen as your flash now. And when it does that flash mode, it's going to make the display for that split second 3 times its normal brightness. So there, you can go out and take all the selfies you want.
Wow, maybe with my crappy light perception, I'll even be able to see that flash.
Hey, you might. Just don't let it blind you. That's the only
right.
thing. So the other thing that they've done, which I can honestly say, not being a visual person, it's a bit hard for me to understand, but they've got this new feature called Live Photos. When you press on a photo using the 3D touch, you can actually see moving objects in the photo. Like you can see water start to ripple or traffic start moving on the street. And this isn't a video. This is a regular photo. And somehow it does this by capturing a second and a half before and after the shot is actually made. Could you explain to me how it can capture a second and a half before you actually make the shot? I don't get that. But
I think it's some sort of beautiful magic.
I think really so too.
Yeah.
The good news is the user doesn't even have to worry about it. You just take your photos as you normally would. And if you want to see them using this new live photo mode, you just 3D touch on them. And they said that these photos don't take up much extra storage space. So it sounded like a win-win pretty much.
And there's audio that can play as well. So it could be really exciting if you're showing photos to people. If there's just that little bit of audio, it might trigger the memory of, oh, this is when I was at the beach with my grandkids. This is the photo of little Johnny on the swing building a sandcastle or what have you.
You are awfully young to have grandkids, but that's a story for another time.
And it's kind of crazy because I don't have kids, so I don't know where the grandkids would come from.
You skipped a generation.
Yeah.
And there is a developer app for API photos, so I guess we'll see what kind of interesting things developers end up doing with it.
Yeah.
So the LTE is advanced. It's going to be twice as fast as last year's. It's a 23-band phone, which means it should be great for Jonathan Mosen and anyone else who travels worldwide. The Wi-Fi is up to twice as fast as last year. The S year is always a phone that's similar in appearance to last year's phone, but when you really think about it and when we really focused on what all they talked about today, there is a lot here under the hood that's different about this year's phone, I think.
So much, and I can't wait.
And if you're an Android user thinking about switching to an iPhone, you can even get an app now in the Google Play Store that you load on your Android that will help you get everything switched over. So Phil said they were just being a good neighbor by doing that.
That was awesome. But seriously, folks, there's never a better time to switch. Last year, things opened up a lot more. But this year, there's just really no reason to hang on to that phone if you're unsure about switching. There's really very little that you can't do now on the iPhone that you could do on the Android. So if you were at all thinking about switching, in terms of accessibility, the iPhone still offers a superior experience. Simply in terms of accessibility and in terms of the overall user interface, it's easy, it's beautiful, it's feature-rich. You really have nothing to lose.
I would just be honest in saying I have a strong opinion that the platform is much more secure and much more safe.
Right, and you are not the customer with Apple. They don't want your data. They don't want your information. They don't want to pull random data out of your emails to show you advertisers. Thank you, Google.
True enough, and also along those lines, too, there's really any more, in my opinion, absolutely no need to jailbreak the iPhone.
Not at all.
You're just opening yourself up for security problems.
Exactly. I've tried it in the past, and I've always gone back to non-jailbroken operating system because the security risks, in my opinion, are just not worth the little things, quite frankly, that you can do as a jailbroken iOS user. It's just not worth it.
Well, Apple has really adopted a lot of the things that the jailbreakers were doing and actually put them in the operating system. So there's just very little reason to jailbreak anymore.
Exactly.
There's a new charging dock accessory that we can all think about buying. And there are new cases, both leather and silicone cases this year for the new phone. And I think the cost of the 6S and the 6S Plus, if I am correct about this, is exactly the same as the cost was last year.
Yes. The 6 and 6 Plus have gone down by $100. The 5S has now gone down to the free phone tier. And for a free phone, folks, I don't know if it's still going to be an 8 gig, which would kind of suck. But especially if it was a 16 gig 5S, that's a great free phone.
It is a great phone. I mean, there's just absolutely nothing wrong with the 5 and the 5S.
Not at all, especially the 5S with the Touch ID. You could not have a better entry-level experience, as I say, as long as they are preserving that 16 gig point of entry. If they're going to do 8 gig, I don't really recommend an 8 gig phone for really anybody. I barely recommend a 16 gig, to be honest with you. But for somebody who's just getting into the operating system, it's a great free way to do so.
It is, but I really encourage people to see if you can't find some way to spend the extra $100 and move away from that 16 gig.
Yeah, if at all possible. My friend Bruce and I get into some lively debates because he is a very happy 16 gig 5S user. But if at all possible, go for the 64 or even the 128.
It might help you a little bit to know that, and of course the carriers are offering similar type programs, but Apple has a new installment plan that's going to be available in the Apple retail stores. I think they're calling it iPhone Upgrade Program, where you essentially get an unlocked phone and you only pay so much per month for really like more or less like leasing that phone, because each year you can trade it in and get the next phone. And it's really the same thing as the AT&T Next plan, which I participate in. But I think they're starting this plan, I believe, at $32 a month for the least expensive phone. So if you're near an Apple retail store, you might at least talk to them about that plan.
Yeah, the nice thing about it is it includes Apple Care Plus, not the crappy insurance that you can get through your phone carrier. So I think next year, Jeremy and I might consider that option. Right now, we're kind of smack dab in the middle of Verizon Edge, and we're going to edge up, but next year we'll be in a better place financially to pay off the full cost of both of our phones and hopefully sell them.
Here's a question I have, and you probably know the answer to this. I haven't quite researched this enough to figure this out. But if you're going to be upgrading your phone every year, and your phone comes with a one-year warranty anyway, what's the advantage of getting AppleCare?
You know, that's a very good question for which I do not have an answer. I just know that if something were to happen through Verizon, they would probably encourage me to get the phone replaced through my phone insurance. They don't do, as far as I can tell, I don't think they do in-store replacements of iPhones. I think at all times you have to get it sent to you from the carrier, whereas if you are going into an Apple store and have this newfangled Apple iPhone plan, if they have the phone in stock, they would probably be able to just replace it.
Yeah, well, the one time that I got my phone and iPhone replaced because it had a scratch on it, it came with a scratch, I did it directly through Apple. I didn't even involve my carrier at all. I just contacted Apple tech support. It did have Apple Care, or probably it was still under warranty, probably almost brand new. But Apple just sent me a new phone. So I don't know. I don't know how it works these days, but that's how it worked the one time that I did it.
Yeah, I think because we're on Next and Edge, our options might be a little bit more limited now. But like I said, I think we may even switch from Verizon next year as well. If T-Mobile coverage continues to improve in this area, I'm going to be working in a building soon that doesn't have Wi-Fi. So I would want to take advantage of their having Apple Music not count against your data. So I think next year might be the year we tell Verizon to shove it as well.
Yeah, the one thing I would say is just make sure that T-Mobile has good coverage in your area. Because some areas do, and yeah, some do and some don't. But I used to love T-Mobile, honestly, back when we were using the Symbian phones.
Right, and they have Wi-Fi calling as well, which, if we're going to be using it around the house, would be great. Or anywhere with Wi-Fi.
Exactly. So you can start getting excited because you can actually pre-order this iPhone this coming Saturday at the time of this recording, which is Saturday, September 12th, which I'm assuming for me will be sometime early Saturday morning, right?
That
I'll be up in the middle of the night trying to order my phone.
Yeah, it's a lot easier for me to stay up till midnight on a Friday night, so I'm really glad they're doing this.
And the phones will actually become available on September 25th, so very, very soon. iOS 9 is supposed to be available on September 16th, so in just a week from the time of this recording.
And I have heard on the Twitter sphere that El Capitan will be available on September the 30th.
Yeah, I don't know. Apple didn't say anything about that today.
It was in a slide.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, that surprised me a little bit that it's quite that early. I was expecting October, but September 30th sounds good to me. There is new iCloud pricing. The 5 gigs is still free, but you're now going to be able to get 50 gigs for 99 cents a month and 200 gigs for $2.99 or a full terabyte for $9.99 a month. So at least they have cut their iCloud pricing in half and makes it a bit more in line with what other people offer.
Yeah, it's competitive right now with Dropbox. If I wasn't a member of so many darn shared folders, I would cancel my 1 terabyte Dropbox $9.99 a month plan. But I have too many shared folders on Dropbox to do that right now.
Yes, well, you have to get all your friends to move to iCloud.
Right, we could move to iCloud in terms of our podcast folder.
We could. So I think that is everything, and maybe even a little more than everything that I know about what happened today. Do you have anything that stands out that we didn't say that we must say before we leave this podcast?
No, we've covered it all, and I hope that you guys have enjoyed learning this information, or in some cases perhaps relearning it if you listen to the keynote, as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you.
Yeah, let us know what you thought. We went into more detail this time, or at least I did. Because
there was so much info. Yeah, you took the notes. I took some notes, but you took better notes.
Yeah, and so I just thought we would really try to deliver all the facts as best we could, and hope we didn't make too many mistakes. I did go through the keynote twice, or the presentation twice, and get some notes. So let us know what you thought about it, and if you do want to talk to us, is there some place they could send an email, or what would they do?
We do. We have this magical thing called an email address, and you send an email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. Again, that's techdoctor@dr-carter.com. Get in touch. We'd love to hear from you.
And this is Robert, the Tech Doctor, along with Allison, the other Tech Doctor, saying so long for now.
And this is Allison, the somewhat exhausted Tech Doctor at this point, saying bye, everyone.